Therefore, please precisely describe all the activities and pastimes of the personality of Godhead, who is full of self-desire and who assumes all these activities by his internal potency. Purport. The word Anukirtaya is very significant. Anukirtaya means to follow the description, not to create a concocted mental description, but to follow. Shonaka Rishi requested Sutta Goswami to describe what he had actually heard from his spiritual master Shukadeva Goswami about the transcendental pastimes the Lord manifested by his internal energy. Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has no material body, but he can assume any kind of body by his supreme will. That is made possible by his internal energy. Yad yad vidatte Bhagavan svachandatmatmamayaya tani me shudadanasya kirtanyan anukirtaya. This is Shonaka Rishi speaking as the spokesman for the whole assembly of sages and the rest of the audience. Although he's using the singular to me, the others there are also eager to hear. Rupa Goswami in the Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu identifies the sages at Naimisharanya as a good example of neophytes who are just beginning to enter the path of devotional service. Their motive is mixed. They're not even beginners in the actual process of Shuddha Bhakti, pure unalloyed devotional service. They're mixed, a mixed bag. The sages at Naimisharanya, some of them were Vaishnavas, some of them were Shaivites, some of them were Karmakandis, some of them were impersonalists. But by hearing from Sutta Goswami all the Puranas, beginning with Mahabharata, then the other Puranas, then last they heard Srimad Bhagavatam. By that hearing process, hearing the whole collection of Puranas, they became elevated. They became purified of their lower natures. Lower, they were great sages. But even the great sages are not as qualified, as elevated, as even the rawest beginner in the process of Shuddha Bhakti. The great sages, who we glorify, whenever someone does tarpanam, you know, the Brahmins do their tarpanam, their oblations and their Gayatri mantra, they are supposed to offer respects to the great sages, rishis. Those sages are worshipable, but a Vaishnav, even a neophyte Vaishnav, one who's beginning to practice Shuddha Bhakti is better situated, is more worshipable than even the great sages. But these sages became, the ones at Naimisharanya were very fortunate, they became pure devotees by hearing from Sutta Goswami so much. And by the time it was that Sutta Goswami was ready to recite the last Purana, the Srimad Bhagavatam, they were actually ready to enter the process of pure devotional service. Krishna says in the Gita, Chatur Vida Vajante Mam Janasukriti Norjuna. There are four kinds of pious people, good people, who approach God. But they don't approach in pure devotional service, they have a mixed style of devotion because they have material motives. Pure devotion must be Anyabhilashita Shunyam, devoid of ulterior motives. If you approach God for material purposes, to advance yourself, to get yourself some reputation, or to get money, or to restore your health, this is not devotion. According to Prahlad, who knows what pure devotion is, nasa bhaktak savaivanik, such a person who's approaching God just to get something material from him, He's not a devotee, Savaivanak. He's a businessman, doing business with God.
How do you do?
But the sages at Namasharanya, although some of them were not pure in their motives, they became purified by that hearing. And by at the very beginning of the Bhavatam, Shonaka speaking on their behalf, announces how eager they are to hear from Sutta the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. They've heard so much already. They've been listening for maybe a whole month. Now, it's not that they've had enough. Not Tripyan, he just said in the last verse, my senses are not satiated. I can't get enough. Maybe enough of this, the various more mundane topics that are spoken of in the Puranas. Maybe enough of that. But as far as, what is it? Vishritau Shruta Devasya. As far as the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, my senses can never become satiated. I have not heard enough. Please tell me more. That eagerness is their adhikar, their qualification to enter pure devotional service. You must be eager. But you can't be eager for Krishna and be eager for Maya at the same time. They're not compatible. The more we're still eager for Maya, which includes the subtle things of reputation, prestige, worship. If we want that, that means there's something weak in our faith or our eagerness to want Krishna. That means we're not very eager to become Krishna's servants. We want to still be the masters in this world, in a gross or a subtle way. But these sages, and being a sage has its perks. Sages are worshipped. They collect disciples very easily, and disciples mean power, money, and so on. But they transcended that. Now, all the sages at Namasharanya became fit candidates to begin the actual process of pure devotion set to Krishna. It's a rare thing. It's only Sutta said earlier, Shradadanasya, the word is here also, Vasudevakata ruchi syat, Mahatsevaya vipra, Punyatirta nishevanat. It's only a very rare fortunate person that gets the most valuable thing in life. The most valuable thing in life is not reputation, it's not power, it's not money, it's not disciples, but Vasudevakata ruchi. You can get all those other things and miss out on the Vasudeva Kataruchi. Or you can get Vasudeva Kataruchi, attraction, a taste for hearing the topics of Krishna. And you can lose it after having it and practicing it for years. It's such a subtle thing. If you commit aparads, if you become distracted by material allurements, you can lose your Vasudeva Kataruchi even after years of having it. So it's the most subtle, rare thing, and it's hard to get, and it's hard to hold on to until it becomes completely firm, fixed. So how it can be had was said by Sutta, someone who is Shushushu and Shraddhadana. Shraddhadana is used by Shonaka in this verse. Shushushu. Sananta, the desiderative form of the verb shru, to hear. So it means eager to hear. But it has a conventional meaning beyond that. It's understood to mean eager to serve. Shushushu means somebody who wants to do some service. The service is linked with hearing. The word for hearing is used to indicate service. So service is based on hearing. If you can't hear, then you can't properly serve. Because service means to do what the person you're serving wants. Not that you make up an idea and then impose it on the person in the name of service. I'm going to do this service for you. And you decide on your own what you're going to do. That's not real service. Service means to hear first. Kinkara. Kinkara is a servant. Kinkarumi. What should I do? You come and you ask, what can I do? Not that you come with your idea, I'm going to do this. So, shu means you're eager to hear, and then on the basis of what you hear, you're eager to go ahead and serve. You know, hear, request, what can I do, and how can I do it? That's shushushu, eagerness to hear. And then shodadana, faithfulness. I can hear and doubt, or be ready to argue. That's not shodadana. I may want to come and hear so I can have a good argument. I like to argue. But that's not shodadana. That may be shushushu. You want to hear and you want to talk back. But shodadana, the second qualification, means that you believe or you have confidence in the authority of the person who's going to say something. So that is basic qualification for entering into pure devotional service, or for getting the taste, for being bestowed the highest treasure, the taste for hearing about Krishna. The rarest thing and the most subtle thing. And then, how do you become shushushu and shodadana? Syat mahat sevaya. By serving the exalted devotees. Mahat seva. So Sutta is telling that to Shaunaka and the other sages, and they have imbibed this concept. They're actually very eager and ready to hear. They want to hear about Lord Kapila, and that will not be enough. They want to hear about many other avatars, and by the time that the ninth canto is finished, they're ready to hear the elaborate description by Shukadev of the pastimes of Krishna in the tenth canto. So here we have, already it's a complex situation. Shaunaka is asking this question, but that's the last of the cycle of repeated hearing, speaking and hearings. Shaunaka is hearing from Sutta the retelling of what Shukadev told Parikshit, and in this third and fourth canto, Shukadev is retelling what Maitreya told to Vidura. So this is Anukirtaya. Hearing or speaking subsequently what was previously spoken by the predecessor authority. This is our method of education in Krishna consciousness. Rather than make up a new idea, we simply want to repeat what the great authorities of the past have spoken. Maybe in many fields it's good to do new research. In fields where research is incomplete, where science has only progressed to a certain point, new research has to be done. And new ideas should supplant old ideas in the natural sciences, say. But in this science of Krishna consciousness, it's not a good idea to come up with new concepts to try to supplant the old concepts. That defeats the whole process of this kind of education. It's different. In the Mahabharata, I think it's part of the episode of after the Swayamvara of Draupadi, Arjuna brought his new bride home to introduce her to his mother. If I'm right, he came to the... They were not in exile then, right? No, it was before they went into exile. Anyway, he came to the residence of Kunti, and he announced to his mother, Mother, please come see what I brought. And what he brought was Draupadi. But she was busy in the kitchen. She said, I can't, come right now. So she didn't turn around to see what it was. She said, whatever it is, share it with your brothers. I don't know if I got the story right. But this is puzzled. He has to, Arjuna did not want to disobey his mother, but how is he going to do this? Share his new bride with his brothers. So, I think it was, he consulted Domya Rishi, what to do. And Domya said, this is a puzzle, I'm not sure. And he spoke a very famous verse, right in this context. What is it? Shrutiho vibhina na chasav. Atarko apatarko pratishta. Shrutiho vibhina na chasav rishir yasya matam nabhinam. Dharmasya tatvam nihitam guhayam. Mahajano yinagatak sapampa. What can I say, Domya said. Yeah, it's very complicated to decide what's the right thing and what's the wrong thing in such unusual situations as this. Logical argument is always inconclusive. I may have my thesis and I may prove it by good logic, and a better logician will come and prove the opposite. Logic never solves anything in the real world definitively. It may be okay in abstract realms of geometry and so on, but deductive logic doesn't ever solve anything in the real world. Shrutayo vibhina, we can go to the authority of the Vedas, but there are many different Vedic texts, and we'll get apparently contradictory opinions from different scriptures. And then we can go to the sages who are supposed to know the import of the Vedas, and they don't agree with one another. In fact, nachasav rishir yasya natam nabhinam. No one's considered a great sage unless he's got a novel opinion of his own. Although the proper Vedic method is to simply imbibe what your predecessors have taught and then maybe explain it in your own words to a modern audience, but not to change the ideas. You must first understand the ancient eternal philosophy and then present it appropriately according to your capacity. In practice, in this rishi business, no one's considered a great sage unless he's got a philosophy of his own, something different. So how to ascertain what is the essence of religion? How to actually decide what to do, the right thing to do and not to do in difficult, confusing situations? Dharmasya tattvam, the real facts of what a man should do, is hidden away in the heart. Nihitam guhayam. Mahajana, therefore, you have to go to the great realized persons, not just great big pundits or persons who are professional sages, but the soul who is actually self-realized, especially the pure devotee of the Lord. You have to follow his advice and his path. Mahajano yinagatak, the way that life has been lived and thoughts have been thought out by the pure souls, the real sadhus, that we must follow. That was Domi's recommendation. And I think the end of the story is that at that moment Narada passed by. And here's a Mahajan, let's ask him. And then Narada gave his advice that it's okay for one lady to marry five men, although it seems unprecedented. I can even remember there was one lady who worshipped Indra and was able to marry five expansions of Indra. You know, so Narada tells Itihasa of one other lady who did the same thing, married five husbands. So it can be done, and therefore that was Narada's judgment, if I have it right. We see this in the history of the Bhagavatam, that the scripture is eternal. Nobody's trying to modify it, update it. It's being passed on as it is from generation to generation. Shukadeva heard from his father Vyasa the 18,000 verse Bhagavatam that existed from the beginning of creation. Brahma heard only four verses from Garbhadakshay Vishnu, but he then studied the complete Bhagavatam also. Brahma did study the 18,000 verse Bhagavatam. Brahma spoke a slightly more expanded version in three chapters. They're recorded in the second canto. The fifth, sixth, and seventh chapters are Brahma's version of the Bhagavatam that he taught to Narada. But he also later taught the whole 18,000 verse form to Narada. Narada heard all 18,000 verses. Narada spoke those 18,000 verses to Vyas. Vyas spoke the same to Shukadev. Shukadev repeated it to Parikshit without changing one word. Therefore, he's got the epithet parrot, repeater, one who repeats verbatim without any addition. And again, spoken by Sutta to Shonaka and the other sages. That ends the tradition of speaking it over and over again. But then our commentators, in ancient times, those commentaries have been lost, but we have the oldest commentary we have is the commentary of Sridhar Swami, and then the later commentators in the various Vaishnava sampradayas, in our sampradaya, our acharyas, they're all commenting on the Bhagavatam. They're not adding to the text. We don't have Sri Jiva Uvacha text in the Bhagavatam, but we have Jiva Goswami's Kramasandarbha, his commentary on the Bhagavatam, where they're taking the text and explaining it. And the explanation continues to expand. Prabhupada has taken the essence of the previous Sanskrit commentaries and distilled them in the form of his Bhaktivedanta purports in English. So that goes, it's ever expanding, we can say elaboration of the Bhagavatam, but now in the form of commentary and then discourse. We have Prabhupada's purports. Nobody has yet sat down to write a new commentary on the Bhagavatam. Maybe in the future someone could do that, write an additional commentary on top of Prabhupada's. No one has attempted that in ISKCON. A sub-commentary on Prabhupada's purports could be done in the future. But his followers are giving Bhagavatam classes and speaking their realizations and expanding even further. But it's all on the basis of Anukirtanam, not making up some different idea, but simply explaining in various ways, according to time and place, the same message, unchanged. So therefore, Shonaka is asking, Anukirtaya, I don't need to hear anything different, anything new. That's not what I'm looking for. Tell me the same old thing, but I want to hear it from your lips, O Sutta Goswami. Manye tvam vishaye vacham statam anyata chandrasat. We consider you, O Sutta, Ugrashrava Sutta, fully qualified to be the authority speaking this Bhagavatam. Although Shonaka was a very elevated Vedic sage, he's speaker of some of the hymns in the Rig Veda. He's the author of the science of pronunciation for the Rig Veda Shaka. He's author of the Rig Veda Pratishaka, pronunciation guide of the Rig Veda. He was known as Mahashala, a great householder who had big establishment where he had many students and was performing big sacrifices. Shonaka has that epithet, Mahashala. Very respected professor of the Vedas. That's why he was the head of the assembly, even though other great sages were there. And he's telling Sutta, who's not even a proper Brahmana, he's a mixed caste, Sutta, that we consider that you are the authority on practically all topics. Vishaye vacham, snatam. Snatam is someone who's taken his bath. That doesn't mean daily bath. That means someone who's finished his education. In the Vedic education, it's not wearing the mortar, what do they call the mortar board, and getting a piece of paper, your diploma. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's the ceremony is snata. And the one who has finished his education is called snatakam. He's taken his bath. Then he can go get married or he can stay in the ashram after that, but he's finished his education. We consider that you are a graduate in all fields, except maybe you don't know some of these ritualistic technicalities that we specialize in. Snatam anyata chandrasat. Maybe you don't know about the Vedic meters And maybe you haven't studied the Vedic mantras in depth because you're not a Brahmin and you're not supposed to study them. So what? You know, we know these things and they're not that important. But you know what's really important. Therefore, we're sitting here at your feet, O Sutta. We're the big Brahmanas and we're sitting at the feet of this Sutta asking you, please enlighten us. Anukirtaya. We can trust that you're going to give us the same message that the ancient sages spoke in the Vedas. We're Vedic authorities. We can't be listening to some nonsense. We'll lose our reputation if we do, if we just listen to some mundane katha or some unqualified person speaking. But we trust that you're qualified. You're going to tell us the same thing that our teachers would have told us. Therefore, Anukirtaya, please go on reciting. According to the ancient authorities, the same eternal message. Hare Krishna. Okay, so I'll stop there. Are there any questions or comments? Hare Krishna. Yeah?
In regards to...
Yeah, I'm just looking at the time.
Yeah, hearing the same thing.
Yes.
Again and again and again and again and again. We often encounter circumstances in which we don't see any obvious precedent, or it's perceptible that we, the modern world presents challenges and problems for us that evidently none of our acharyas had to deal with before.
Yes.
And so it seems like there's no real objective way to understand what our Guru Sadhu and Shastra would advise in this regard.
Yes.
So therefore we have different Maybe just comment on this.
Well, there can always be differences of opinion, and it's not that only one can be right. There may be differences of opinion that are all valid, but just different approaches, different emphasis. Well, we have confidence that everything is answered by the Vedic authority, or even more appropriate to our own situation, that the Bhagavatam has all the answers to all the questions. That all knowledge that we need is contained in the Bhagavatam. That's why we're emphasizing study of the Bhagavatam. Otherwise, if we need to learn other things, then we better expand our curriculum. But we're going to focus our curriculum on primarily on the study of the Bhagavatam. Because all the answers are there. Even for the modern world. It's a matter of knowing, deeply understanding the principles, and then being able to understand how to apply them to different situations. If you really understand the eternal principles, then you should be able to figure out how to apply it to a situation that doesn't have precedent. It comes from being inspired to understand properly. So the real knowing doesn't mean being, imbued with knowledge doesn't just mean filled with information. That knowledge, that information has to be transformed into realization. That comes not from just cramming your head or memorizing. It comes from getting the blessings of your teachers. You have to satisfy your guru and get his blessings. May everything I taught you become fructified. Isn't that what Sandipani told Krishna and Balaram? I don't remember the exact words. But they, because they memorized, they learned the 64 arts and all the Vedas and everything in so many days, 64 days. But then, when they brought back his dead son, who happened to be Madhu Mangala, they gave the dakshini he asked for. Then he blessed them. May everything I taught you bear fruit. May it become realized. So, Krishna and Balaram don't need that blessing, but the rest of us do. Otherwise, our education, even with a diploma, is barren. Then, if we're blessed to realize what we've learned, then we'll be able to apply it. Even to the confusing modern world where everything looks different. It really, nothing's different. Every age has different situations, changing situations, and those who are actually sages, it's their job to take the ancient knowledge and apply it. It's been done in every generation. It's nothing new. It looks new.
I was thinking that actually it's quite easy for someone who has studied philosophical history or Indian history for some time to see how that's so, because things recycle themselves, things reincarnate. Ideologies, for example, reincarnate themselves just as often as those who invented them do.
Yes.
And for the same reasons also. So they come in different names and forms, but actually the essence and the purport and the,
the basic ideas are just recycled. They keep on coming around again and again.
Yes.
And the history of the exposition of philosophy. One thing, sages sitting down and realizing things for themselves, private meditations. But when it comes to public exposition of philosophy, it's usually in response to what's going on in the outside world. For example, Nyaya philosophy, the science of logic, taught by Gautama. It was taught by Gautama long, long ago. And in Kali Yuga, the tradition was lost. The earliest commentary we have on Gautama's sutras was written in the 2nd century A.D. by, not Advaitacharya, before him, Vatsyayana, as the Nyaya Bhasha. Maybe 150 A.D. And then around 250 A.D., there was a second commentary, the Udyota, we don't know his name, the Advaitacharya. So these two commentaries, we don't have any other commentary in the tradition of Nyaya, we just have the sutras. The sutras are probably thousands of years old, who knows how old. There was a tradition lost, forgotten, nobody cared about it, and nobody understood it anymore. They had the sutras, but nobody really could explain them. Why did these two scholars write these commentaries all of a sudden, after 1st century AD? Because the Buddhists became active in logic. For the first 1,000 years of the history of Buddhism, they showed no interest in didactic logic, in polemics. They refused. If someone asked them, some philosophical question, the Buddhists would say, "Well, I won't say it's true. I won't say it's not true. I won't say it's not true or not true." And they would just refuse to answer. They wouldn't get into philosophical debates. But somehow, about the time of Christ, Buddhists began to become interested in logic. You had Dignaga and Dharmakirti after him, who became big logicians in the Buddhist school. And the Vedic Brahmins, or the Brahmanas at that time, they got nervous that these Buddhists were becoming logicians. We have to rediscover our tradition of logic. So there was an interest in expounding the ancient system of Gautama in response to the fact that these atheists, these Buddhists, were becoming big logicians. In response to opponents, Then you develop your presentation of your philosophy. So usually, and it's because of the threat by the Advaitavadis, the Vaishnav Acharyas started writing their commentaries on Vedanta Sutra and other books. So it's usually in response to what's going on in the outside world, especially opposing thoughts that have to be responded to. When the Purva Paksha is there, when someone's got a contrary idea, then you got to explain your idea better than you did before. And that's the history of the practical history of Indian philosophy. It's always in response to what's going on, among others.
Actually, that example you gave is directly analogous to our present tradition, and it takes the wisdom of someone like Srila Prabhupada, the real deep realization you were mentioning earlier.
Yes.
To be able to see that connection,
yes,
and to be able to explicate that connection as well for a general audience, as
yes,
Srila Prabhupada did before or after him, as far as I'm aware, nobody either had the gumption or the ability to identify this Buddhism with modern science for Srila Prabhupada.
Yeah, it was just ignored.
Yeah.
It's not that in the 17th, 18th, 19th century, the Indian pundit didn't know that something was going on in the West, but they ignored it. They just didn't look. They made no attempt to respond to it, to communicate with it. Prabhupada looked around and identified his audience, and figured out how to address that audience, the modern audience. It's something that nobody did before. Bhaktivinoda Thakur started to do that.
He saw the increasing relevance, and became an incursionary factor.
Yes. Yeah, because Indian civilization was on the verge of being completely absorbed by Western. It's already been done, you can see it nowadays. You know, there are young people, you know, educated people working as computer programmers in Delhi who'd never heard of Vrindavan. Yeah. So their culture has been swallowed. You know.
They will go to Taj Mahal, not to Vrindavan.
Yeah, they don't even know Vrindavan is there. They'll pass right by it on the Taj Express and not even know. There's Mathura station with all these dirty people, but they never, you know, they never even step foot on Mathura for 1 minute. Don't even know it's there. So they ignore it. They, you know, that Prabhupada recognized, you know, the reality. Bhaktivinoda Thakur before and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati made the, you know, the proclamation or the prediction that Chaitanya's moon is moving west. Yeah. He saw that, that they just shift the focus. The audience is different and we have to address them. But address them with the same ancient message, just presenting it appropriately for the audience. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Anything else? Okay. Yes.
Why it is always emphasized by the or cycle of Bhagavatam that it should be heard again and it should be taught, discussed again and again?
Because that gives us our life. It's the source of all. What is what Rupa Goswami, Sanat Goswami is saying in his prayer? Mareka bando mat sangin marguro mat mahadana man nistaraka. My only friend, my deliverer, my guru, my companion, you know, my good fortune. This is Srimad Bhagavatam. So, yes, yes. And pivita bhagavatam rasamalaya muhurdaho. We should constantly be relishing this nectar. It's not all the other books don't have the potency that in Kali Yuga that Bhagavatam has. This book is empowered to change the world. It's certainly to change us as individuals. It's not just a book of knowledge. It awakens our Krishna consciousness. Five angas of sadhana bhakti, of vaidhi bhakti, are singled out by Rupa Goswami in the Nectar of Devotion as being the most potent. And one of the five is Srimad Bhagavata Artanam Aswado Rosikaiksaha. Relishing. Not cramming your head with the facts of the Bhagavatam, but relishing the messages of the Bhagavatam in the association of Rasika Bhaktas. Not professors, not scholars, but devotees who actually are getting a taste from the Bhagavatam. Sit with them. And here, that's one of the five most potent processes of Vaidhi Bhakti. And not just Vaidhi Bhakti. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was sitting there in Puri hearing from Raghunath Bhakta Goswami sometimes as a speaker or Gadadhara Pandit. Yeah. And you know the famous picture, Haridas Thakur is standing there in the back and all the devotees are sitting. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu got great pleasure just sitting and listening in this with his devotees to Srimad Bhagavatam. Let one of his devotees speak, and he would just sit and listen. And he didn't want to hear only the Rasalila. He liked to hear story of Dhruva, of Prahlad, these stories. Yes, yes. Dhruva was started off as a Karma Mishra Bhakta, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to hear his story. How determined Dhruva was, even though he had material motive, how determined he was to you know, conquer Lord Narayan. That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took a great pleasure in hearing over and over again. Not just, okay, I'm done with this canon, now I can jump into the Rasalila. No, he wanted to hear again and again, even the earlier parts. When you're actually getting pleasure from something, then you want to do it over and over again. That's the answer. Because it's great enjoyment. Yes. And that's Shonaka and the Rishi saying that. We're not...
It's parallel to...
Swadhu, Swadhu, but it means it gets more and more relishable step by step. It doesn't become more, you know, hackneyed. I've heard this 100 times. I'm bored with it. But actually, it's more enjoyable the more you listen to it. Because it awakens your realization. What you heard 10 years ago, when you hear it again, now that you're 10 years maturer, you get much deeper realization from it. And if you listen to it every day, then you don't have to wait 10 years. you'll quickly become deeper and deeper absorbed in the realization.
Prabhupada also said repetition of a good thing is desired. That's one important thing.
Yes.
Because we forget 90% of what goes in the ears goes out of the ears.
Yes.
And it's gone. And
yes.
10 minutes after the class.
Yes.
I was thinking in regard to what you commented in opening the class, that hearing means shushrushu, means ready to serve also.
Yes.
Prabhupada, one thing that Prabhupada used to emphasize again and again and again was hearing means acting.
Hearing means acting.
Yeah. That hearing
yes.
stops.
If you really heard, if you really heard, you're going to do something.
Yeah. It's not really hearing.
And you do the right thing.
Yeah. All of those who were in Prabhupada's personal association that I've heard from, they will unanimously confirm that if Prabhupada gave you an instruction to do something, or if you make a mistake, Prabhupada he wouldn't take it very seriously, but he would instruct you. But if you did it again, then most likely you would be dismissed. Because he expected you to do it.
Yes.
To learn.
Yes.
From what he said, and to take it seriously.
Yes.
And apply it.
Yes. Meant to be applied, not just theoretical knowledge.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu identified everything in Vrindavan and Guradhar and Masala and 500 years back.
Yes.
And Roop and Sanatana Goswami did much further story.
Yes.
But how Prabhupada within some years he spread Krishna consciousness like anything. Like a wildfire.
Yes. Because
everything was written and given on in the plate to Prabhupada.
Yes.
Everything was there. It is only Prabhupada who spread it to the whole world.
Yes. But not just spread, but what he spread was the real thing. Someone else could have spread, but spread something adulterated. Now, usually things that are distributed widely are cheap.
Uh-huh.
Adulteration. Prabhupada gave the real thing, no adulteration. No dilution. Unheard of. Yeah, it's not ordinary business practice in India. To be delivering to everybody the real thing.
Free
at a fair price. Because he was empowered to do this by Rupa and Sanatan and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Through Rupa and Sanatan. Prabhupada got the special empowerment to do this. And what the devotees were Prabhupada's representative, they're what they are because Prabhupada has empowered them. Because devotees who please Prabhupada become empowered to do Prabhupada's work. Anybody can become like that if you please Prabhupada. But he's got his standards. Although he'd like to show his mercy indiscriminately to everybody, he's a representative of the Sampradaya, Srila Prabhupada. So he's got to insist on following the rules. Do it the right way, and then I'll bless you. Prabhupada's ready to bless us all, empower us to do his mission, help carry out his mission, but we have to do it the right way. Yeah. Yes. How am I going to give all these fruits out myself? Okay, time? Okay, thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Very good. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki.
Jai.
Oh, are you doing? I'll be here.